Fuck. Sarah had never dreamed that she would ever again be so open with another man. If there was any comparison to be made, it was between Sarah and her old self. Something was altered inside of her, and not just her moral compass. She felt different with Will. She didn't have to immediately know everything about this man she'd shared her bed with. She didn't feel the need to demand answers about the obvious abuse he had suffered. For the first time in her life, Sarah felt patient. The girl who had gotten kicked out of Sunday school for arguing with the teacher and driven her parents, her sister, and eventually her husband crazy with her unyielding desire to understand every last detail about everything on Earth, was finally learning how to relax. Maybe seeing the Polaroid of Will's sutured mouth had taught her a lesson about prying. Or maybe it was just the nature of life that you learned from past mistakes. For now, Sarah was content to just be with Will. The rest would come in time. Or it wouldn't. Either way, she felt remarkably content. There was an insistent knock at the door, probably Abel Conford from across the hall. The lawyer had anointed himself czar of the parking lot. Every board meeting Sarah attended started with Abel complaining about visitors parking in the wrong spaces. Sarah pulled her robe tight as she opened the door. Instead of her neighbor, she found Faith Mitchell. "I'm sorry to barge in on you." Faith pushed her way into the apartment. She was wearing a bulky navy blue jacket with a hood pulled over her head. Dark sunglasses obscured half her face. Her jeans and Chuck Taylors completed the ensemble. She looked like a PTA mom's idea of a cat burglar. Sarah could only ask, "How did you get in?" "I told your neighbor I was a cop and he let me in." "Great," Sarah mumbled, wondering how long it would take for everyone in the building to think she was being arrested. "What's going on?" Faith took off the sunglasses. There were 5 tiny bruises circling her face. "I need you to call Will for me." She went to the window and looked down at the parking lot. "I thought about this all night. I can't do it alone. I don't think I'm capable." She shielded her eyes with her hand, though the sun had yet to come up. "They don't know I'm here. Ginger fell asleep. Taylor left last night. I sneaked out through the backyard. I took Ross Levy's car. I know they've tapped my phones. They're watching me. They can't know that I'm doing this. They can't know that I talk to anybody." She was a poster child for hypoglycemia. Sarah suggested, "Why don't you sit down?" Faith kept her perch over the parking lot. "I sent my children away. They're with my brother. He's never even changed a diaper. This is too much responsibility for Jeremy." "Okay, let's talk about it. Come over here and sit down with me." "I have to get her back, Sarah. I don't care what it takes, what I have to do." Her mother. Will had told Sarah about his trip to Coastal State Prison, his conversation with Roger Ling. "Faith, sit down." "I can't sit, or I'll never get up again. I need Will. Can you please just call him?" "I'll get him for you. I promise, but you have to sit down." Sarah guided her over to the stool by the kitchen counter. "Did you eat breakfast?" She shook her head. "My stomach's too upset. How's your blood sugar?" She stopped shaking her head. Her guilty expression was answer enough. Sarah made her voice firm. "Faith, I'm not going to do anything until we get your numbers in order. Do you understand me?" Faith didn't argue, perhaps because part of her knew that she needed help. She felt around in her jacket pocket and pulled out a handful of hard candy that she dropped on the counter. Next came a large gun, then her wallet, a set of keys with a gold cursive L on the chain, and finally, her blood testing kit. Sarah scrolled through the tester's memory, checking the stats. Faith had obviously been playing candy roulette for the last 2 days. It was a common trick among diabetics, using candy to fight the lows, gritting out the highs. It was a good way to get through a difficult period, but it was an even better way to end up in a coma. I should take you to the hospital right now. Sarah gripped the monitor in her hand. Do you have your insulin? Faith dug into her pockets again and put 4 disposable insulin pens on the counter. She started babbling. I got them from the pharmacy this morning. I didn't know how much to take. They showed me, but I've never used them before, and they're so expensive I didn't want to mess up. My ketones are okay. I used a strip last night and this morning. I should probably get a pump. An insulin pump wouldn't be a bad idea. Sarah slid a testing strip into the monitor. Did you eat supper last night? Sort of. I'll take that as a no, Sarah mumbled. What about snacks? Anything? Faith leaned her head in her hand. Can't think straight with Jeremy and Emma gone. Zeke called this morning. He says they're settled in, but I can tell he's annoyed. He's never been good around kids. Sarah took Faith's finger and lined up the lancet. We are going to have a long talk when this is over about your noncompliance. I know that saying right now is stressful for you is an incredible understatement, but your diabetes isn't something you can magically put on hold. Your vision, your circulation, your motor skills. Sarah didn't finish the sentence. She'd lectured so many diabetics about this same issue that she felt like she was reading from a script. You have to take care of yourself or you're going to end up blind or in a wheelchair or worse. Faith said, "You look different." Sarah patted down her hair, which was sticking straight up in the back. You're practically glowing. Are you pregnant? Sarah laughed, surprised by the question. An ectopic pregnancy in her 20s had led to a partial hysterectomy. Will wasn't that much of a miracle worker. You're 130? 135. Sarah dialed out the correct dosage on the pen. You're going to inject this. Then I'm going to cook breakfast for you, and you're not doing anything else until you've eaten every bite. That stove cost more than my house. Faith leaned over the counter for a better look. Sarah pushed her back down. How much money do you make? She took Faith's hand and wrapped her fingers around the insulin pin. You do this, and I'll go get Will. You can call him from here. I know what you're going to say. Sarah didn't stop to explain herself, especially since Faith was obviously having trouble processing information. She grabbed her clothes off the counter and went into the bedroom. Will was standing in front of the dresser putting on his shirt. She saw his broad chest reflected in the mirror. The dark stain of electrical burns traveling down the flat of his belly and disappearing into his jeans. Sarah had put her mouth on every inch of him last night, but standing here, in the light of day, she felt awkward around him. He looked at her reflection. Sarah pulled her robe tighter around her waist. He had made the bed. The pillows were stacked neatly against the headboard. This wasn't how she'd envisioned her morning. He asked, "What's wrong?" She put her folded clothes on the bed. "Faith is here." "Here?" He turned around. He sounded almost panicked. Why? How did she know? She doesn't know. She asked me to call you. She's terrified her phone's being tapped. Does she know about her mother? I don't think so. Sarah put her hand to her chest, cinching the robe again, feeling every bit of her nakedness underneath. She said that people are watching her. She's acting paranoid. Her blood sugar is off the charts. She's taking her insulin now. She should settle once we get some food into her. Do I need to get breakfast? I can make her something. I can. He stopped, looking extremely uncomfortable. Maybe I should do that. For Faith, I mean. You could cook me something after. So much for the honeymoon period. At least she knew now why Bob had smelled like scrambled eggs the other night. I'll stay in here to give you some privacy. Could you? He hesitated. It might be better if you were there. I'm going to have to tell her about her mother. I thought Amanda said to wait. Amanda says a lot of things I don't agree with. He indicated that she should leave the room ahead of him. Sarah walked down the hall. She could feel Will close behind her, despite what had happened the night before, some of it in this very hallway. He felt like a stranger to her. Sarah gripped her robe tighter, wishing she had stopped to change into some real clothes. Faith was still sitting at the kitchen bar. Some of her nervous energy had dissipated. She saw Will and said, "Oh." He looked embarrassed. Sarah felt the same. Maybe that explained his standoffish mood. It seemed wrong for them to be together given what had happened to Evelyn Mitchell. Still, Faith said, "It's all right. I'm happy for you." Will didn't acknowledge the comment. "Dr. Linton says you need to eat."
"I need to talk to you first."
Will looked at Sarah. She shook her head. "You need breakfast first." Will opened the dishwasher and took out the frying pan. He found the eggs and bread in their proper place. Faith watched him make breakfast. She didn't speak. Sarah didn't know if she was crashing or if she just didn't know what to say. Probably a little of both. For her part, Sarah had never felt so uncomfortable in her own home. She watched Will break the eggs and butter the toast. His jaw was rigid. He didn't look up at her. She might as well have stayed in the bedroom. Will took three plates out of the cabinet and loaded them up with food. Sarah and Faith sat at the bar. Though there was a third chair, Will stood, leaning against the counter. Sarah picked at her food. Faith ate half her eggs and a slice of toast. Will cleaned his plate, then finished Faith's toast, as well as Sarah's, before scraping the rest into the trash and stacking the plates in the sink. He rinsed the bowl that had held the eggs, ran some water in the frying pan, then washed his hands. Finally, he said, "Faith, I have to tell you something." She shook her head. She must have known what was coming. He stood with his back against the counter. He didn't lean over and take her hands. He didn't come around and sit beside her. He just told her the news straight out. "Last night, I was at Coastal State Prison. I talked to a man who's pretty high up in the drug trade, Roger Ling." He kept his eyes focused on hers. "There's no other way to say this. He told me that your mother was killed. Shot in the head." She didn't respond at first. She sat there, with her elbows on the counter, hands hanging down, mouth open. Eventually, she said, "No, she's not." "Faith, did you find the body?"
"No, but when was this? When did he tell you?"
"Late, around 9 o'clock.
"It's not true."
"Faith, it's true. This guy knows what he's talking about. Amanda says..."
"I don't care what Amanda says."
She dug around in her pockets again.
"Mandy doesn't know what she's talking about. Whoever this guy is who you talked to was lying."
Will glanced at Sarah.
"Look," Faith said. She had an iPhone in her hands. "Do you see this? It's Jeremy's Facebook page. They've been sending messages."
Will pushed away from the counter. "What?"
"I met one of them last night. At the grocery store, he did this."
She indicated the bruises on her face.
"I told him I had to have proof of life. He emailed me through Jeremy's Facebook account this morning."
"What?"
Will repeated. The color had drained from his face. "You met him alone? Why didn't you call me? He could have..." "Look at this."
She showed him the phone. Sarah couldn't see the image, but she heard the sound. A woman's voice said,
"It's Monday morning, 5:38.
She paused. There was background noise.
"Faith, listen to me. Don't do anything they say. Don't trust them. Just walk away from this. You and your brother and the kids are my family. My only family."
Suddenly, the voice grew stronger.
"Faith, this is important. I need you to remember our time together before Jeremy."
Faith said, "It stops right there." Will asked,
"What's she talking about?
The time before Jeremy?"
"When I was pregnant."
Her cheeks colored, though almost 20 years had passed. "Mom stayed with me.
She was... Faith shook her head. I wouldn't have made it through without her. She just kept telling me to be strong, that it would be over eventually and then everything would be all right. Sarah put her hand on Faith's shoulder. She could not imagine the pain that the other woman was going through. Will stared at the iPhone. What's on the television set behind her? Good day, Atlanta. I checked with the station. This is the weather segment they aired half an hour ago. You can see the time over the station logo. I got the file 2 minutes later. He handed Sarah the phone, but still would not look her in the eye. Curiosity had always been her weakness. Sarah's reading glasses were on the counter. She slipped them on so she could see the small details. The screen showed Evelyn Mitchell sitting beside a large plasma screen TV. The sound was off, but Sarah saw the weather woman pointing to the 5-day forecast. Evelyn was looking off camera, probably at the man filming her. Her face was a bloody mess. She moved stiffly, as if in a great deal of pain. Her words slurred as she began, "It's Monday morning." Sarah let the video play out, then put the phone down. Faith was watching Sarah closely. How does she look? Sarah took off her glasses. She could hardly render a medical opinion based on a grainy video, but it was obvious to anyone that Evelyn Mitchell had been very badly beaten. Still, she said, "She looks like she's holding up." "That's what I thought." Faith turned to Will. "I told them I'd meet them at noon. But the email says 12:30, Mom's house."
"Your mother's house?"
he repeated. "It's still an active crime scene." "Maybe it's been released. APD isn't telling me anything. Let me find the email." Faith moved her thumbs across the screen again and handed the phone to Will. "Oh," she said, reaching for the device. "I forgot."
"I've got it."
Will took Sarah's glasses off the counter and slipped them on. He stared at the phone for a few seconds. Sarah couldn't tell if he'd read the email or was just making a lucky guess when he said,
"They want the money."
Faith took the phone away from him. "There is no money." Will just stared at her. "It's not true," Faith said. "It was never true. You couldn't prove anything. She wasn't dirty. Boyd and the rest of them were on the take, but Mom never took anything." "Faith," Will said, "your mother had a bank account."
"So what? Everyone has a bank account."
"An out-of-state bank account.
It's in your father's name. She still has it. There's been about 60 grand in and out of it as far as I can tell. There might be other accounts in other states. Other names. I don't know." Faith shook her head.
"No, you're lying."
"Why would I lie about that?"
"Because you can't admit that you were wrong about her. She wasn't dirty."
Tears filled her eyes. She had the look of someone who knew the truth but could not accept it.
"She wasn't."
There was another knock at the door. Sarah guessed that Abel Conford had finally noticed the extra cars in the parking lot. Wrong again.
"Good morning, Dr. Linton."
Amanda Wagner did not look pleased to be standing in the hallway. Her eyes were red. The makeup had been wiped off her nose. Her skin was darker, where foundation and blush covered her cheeks. Sarah opened the door wider. She tightened her robe again, wondering where the nervous tick had come from. Perhaps it was because she was completely naked underneath and the black silk was as thin as crepe paper. She hadn't planned on hosting a party this morning. Faith seemed incensed to see Amanda.
"What are you doing here?"
"Roz Levy called. She said you stole her car."
"I left a note."
"Which she strangely did not interpret as the proper way to ask for permission. Fortunately, I was able to talk her out of calling the police."
She smiled at Will.
"Good morning, Dr. Trent."
Will feigned a sudden fascination with the tiles on Sarah's kitchen floor.
"Wait a minute," Faith said. "How did you know where I was?"
"Roz lowjacked the car. I called in a few favors at dispatch."
"Lowjack?
It's a 900-year-old Corvair. It's worth $5. Amanda took off her coat and handed it to Sarah.
I'm sorry to intrude on your morning, Dr. Linton. I love what you've done to your hair.
Sarah forced a smile under her face as she hung the coat in the closet. Would you like some coffee?
Yes, thank you.
She turned to Will and Faith.
Should I be hurt that I wasn't invited to this party?
No one seemed up to answering her. Sarah took 3 mugs down from the cabinet and poured coffee into each of them. She heard Evelyn Mitchell's voice on the iPhone as Faith played the video for their new guest. Amanda asked her to play it again, then a 3rd time, before asking,
When did this come in?
A little over 30 minutes ago.
Read me the message that came with it.
Faith read, 12:30 at 339 Little John. Bring the cash in a black duffel bag. Do not alert anyone. We are watching you. If you deviate from these instructions, she will be dead and so will you and your family. Remember what I said.
Roger Ling.
Amanda's voice was one of restrained fury.
I knew that bastard was lying. You can't trust a goddamn word any of them say.
She seemed to realize the greater meaning of her words. Her mouth opened in surprise.
She's alive.
She laughed.
Oh, God, I knew the old girl wouldn't give up without a fight.
She put her hand to her chest.
How could I think for a minute that...
She shook her head. The smile on her face was so wide that she finally covered it with her hand. Will asked the more important question. Why would they want to meet at your mother's house?
It's not secure. They won't have the advantage. It doesn't make sense.
Faith answered, It's familiar. It's easy to keep an eye on.
Will said, But there's no way that the crime scene's been released. It'll take days to process everything.
Amanda supplied,
The kidnappers must know something we don't.
It could be a test, Will countered. If we clear out the forensic team, it'll be obvious that Faith called the police, or us. He told Faith,
You pull up to the house, and you're out in the open. You go inside, and you're walking right into their hands. What's to stop them from shooting you and taking the money? Especially if we can't put in a tactical team to secure the area. We can make do,
Amanda insisted.
There are only 3 routes in and out of that neighborhood. They make a move in either direction, and we'll have pistols at the ready.
Will ignored the bravado. He opened the drawer by the refrigerator and took out a pen and pad of paper. He held the pen awkwardly in his left hand, resting the barrel between his middle and 4th fingers. Sarah watched as he covered the page with a large T, then drew 2 irregularly shaped squares, 1 on the arm of the T, 1 at the base. His spatial recollection was better than Sarah would have guessed, but then he'd probably been to Faith's house several times. He explained, Faith's house is on the corner here. Evelyn is here on Little John. He traced an L-shaped line between the 2 houses. We've got all this open space. They could block the intersection here and take her. They could park a van at the same spot and shoot her from a distance. She could pull into the driveway here, and up comes their black van. 2 in the head, just like Castillo at the warehouse. Or they could grab her and be on the interstate or Peachtree Road within 5 minutes. Or they could make it easy and set up here. He drew an oblong square beside Evelyn's house.
Roz Levy's carport. She's got a knee wall here where they could set up with a rifle. The bathroom window to Evelyn's house faces Mrs. Levy's. It's down an incline. You can see straight through to the kitchen door from Mrs. Levy's without anyone knowing. Faith comes in the door with a bag of cash, and they drop her.
Amanda took the pen and turned the base of the T into a circle.
Little John loops around. The whole neighborhood folds back on itself.
She drew more arcs.
This is Nottingham, Friar Tuck, Robin Hood, Beverly, Lionel.
She drew large X's at the endpoints.
Beverly dumps out onto Peachtree here, where every car in the world eventually passes. The other end throws you back into the infinite loop of Ansley Park. Lionel does the same. They're bottlenecks. Most of the houses along these routes have on-street parking. We could have 10 cars at each point and no one would notice.
Will said, I'm not worried about their exit routes. I'm worried about Faith going into that house alone. If they really are watching the place, they'll know the minute someone shows up who shouldn't be there. They've had almost 3 full days to get the lay of the neighborhood, possibly more. Even if the CSU guys leave, they'll be counting the number who go in and the number who go out. Amanda turned over the paper. She drew a rough diagram of a house, pointing out the rooms.
Faith comes in through the kitchen. The foyer is here, looking into the living room. Here's the bookcase on the left. My left takes up the entire wall. Sofa backs up to here. The wingback chair is here on the right. A couple of other chairs are here and here. Stereo console, here. Sliding glass doors opposite the foyer.
She tapped the pen to what must have been the master bedroom.
They'll keep Ev in here until Faith comes with the money. Then they'll bring her into the living room. It's the obvious area for the exchange.
Nothing is obvious here. He grabbed the pen. We can't cover the front windows because we don't know who's watching the house. We can't cover the back because the yard is wide open to the neighbors and they'll see movement at any window. We still don't know how many kids are left on this team. There could be one, there could be 100. He threw down the pen. His tone was firm.
I don't like it, Faith. You can't go in there. Not on their terms. We'll find another way to do this. We'll suggest another location that we can secure ahead of time so that we can make sure you're safe.
Amanda's tone betrayed her irritation.
Don't be so fatalistic, Will. We've got 6 hours. All of us know the layout of the house, so that's our advantage as well as theirs. I know every old broad in that neighborhood. It's a residential street. We've got joggers, delivery men, cable trucks, meter readers, postal carriers, and afternoon strollers we can tap into. I can dribble in 4 teams over the next few hours, and no one will be the wiser. We're not a bunch of Keystone cops. We can figure out a way to do this.
I'll do it, Will offered, and Sarah felt her heart jump into her throat.
You can hardly pass for Faith.
We'll send them an email to let them know I'm going to make the exchange. Roger Ling knows what I look like. Even if he's not involved in this, he's obviously enjoying the show. He knows who these guys are. He can tell them to trust me. Sarah felt a wave of relief to see Amanda start shaking her head even before he'd finished talking. He insisted,
It's safer this way, safer for Faith.
As usual, Amanda didn't hold back.
That's one of the most idiotic things I've ever heard come from your mouth. Think about what we've seen over the last couple of days. This is amateur hour. Julia Ling practically laid it out for us. We're dealing with a bunch of young, stupid boys who think that they know how to play cops and robbers. We'll either have them on the ground or in it before they know what hit them.
Will wasn't swayed. They may be young, but they're fearless. They've killed a lot of people. They've taken a lot of stupid risks.
None more stupid than sending you in instead of Faith. That's the way to get people killed.
Amanda decided.
We'll do it my way. We'll figure out how to strategically place our people. We'll have eyes on Faith at all times. We'll wait until the kidnappers show up with Evelyn. Faith will do the swap, and then we'll nab them when they try to make their escape.
Will wouldn't give in. He was adamant.
She can't do this. She can't go in there alone. Either let me do it, or we'll find another way.
Faith said, If I'm not alone, then my mother is dead. Will looked down at the floor. He obviously thought that there was still the real possibility that Evelyn Mitchell was dead. Sarah found herself silently agreeing with him. This didn't sound like a plan to get Evelyn back. It sounded like a plan to get Faith killed. Amanda was so hell-bent on saving her friend that she couldn't see the collateral damage. Sarah had forgotten about the coffee. She kept one for herself, then passed the other mugs to Amanda, then Will.
Thank you.
Will awkwardly took his. It was as if he was making sure that their hands didn't touch. Faith said, He doesn't drink coffee. I'll take it. Sarah felt her cheeks start to burn. You probably shouldn't be drinking caffeine right now. Will cleared his throat.
That's okay. I like it sometimes.
He took a sip from the mug. He practically grimaced as he swallowed. Sarah couldn't take much more of this. The only way she could be more out of place would be if she pulled out an accordion and started singing polka tunes. I should give y'all some privacy. Amanda stopped her.
If you don't mind, Dr. Linton, I'd like a fresh ear on this.
They were all looking at her. Impossibly, Sarah felt even more naked than before. She looked at Will for help, but his blank expression was probably the same one he gave to the woman at the bank or the guy who picked up his recyclables. There was nothing to be done about it. She sat down beside Faith. Amanda took the other seat.
All right, let's go over what we know so we're all on the same page. Will, run it down for us.
He put down the coffee mug and started talking. He told Faith about everything that had happened since Evelyn had been taken, detailing the crime scene, their visit with Boyd Spivey at the DNC, and his silent ex-colleagues at Valdosta State Prison. Faith's lips parted in surprise when he told her about Roz Levy's photographs of Evelyn's gentleman friend. Still, she kept silent as he detailed Sarah's ordeal at the hospital and the shootout at Julia Ling's warehouse. Sarah felt that familiar tightness in her chest when he got to this last part. The cut on his ear. A bullet had whizzed by, less than an inch from his skull.
Will said Ricardo Ortiz and Hironobu Kwan knew each other from school. They both went to Westminster. They were most likely working in Ling Ling's cabinet shop together. They got it into their heads to start their own business. They obviously pulled together a crew from the other guys working in the shop. Ricardo went to Sweden and picked up some heroin for them to sell. According to Roger Ling, the boys were all bragging about it. Benny Chu, strong arm for the Yellow Rebels, picked up Ricardo and basically beat the crap out of him. He was about to pull the plug, but Ricardo, or maybe Hironobu, told him where they could get some serious money.
Faith had been quietly taking all this in, but now she mumbled, "Mom."
"Right," Will confirmed. Chuck Finn and Hironobu Kwan were in the same rehab facility for at least a month. Chuck must have told Hironobu about the money. Ricardo was about to die, so Hironobu says, "I know where I can get almost $1 million in cash." Benny Chu takes him up on the offer.
Amanda picked up the story.
"That's what they were looking for at Evelyn's. They thought she had money at the house. When she didn't give it up, they took her."
Sarah thought it was convenient that Amanda had skipped over the fact that Hector Ortiz, the cousin of one of the most powerful drug lords in Atlanta, was dead in Evelyn's trunk. She should have kept her mouth shut, but this was her house. They had barged in without notice, and Sarah was tired of being polite. That doesn't explain why Hector Ortiz was there. Amanda raised one eyebrow.
"No, it doesn't, does it?"
Sarah didn't work for this woman. She wasn't going to walk on eggshells.
"You're not going to answer the question?"
There was a crocodile smile on Amanda's lips.
"The more important issue here is that they did all of this because they want money. We can negotiate with people who want money."
Will said, "It's not about money."
"We don't have time for your woman's intuition," Amanda snapped.
His voice sounded tired, but he didn't back down.
"They're trying to get Faith trapped in that house for a reason. If we go in without knowing that reason, then it's not going to end well, not for any of us."
What he said sounded perfectly reasonable, but Sarah could tell Amanda wasn't buying it. Still, he kept trying.
"Look, if it was just about money, they would have made a ransom demand the first day. They wouldn't be doing this back and forth through Facebook. They wouldn't risk meeting Faith face-to-face in the grocery store. It would be a simple transaction. Make the call, pick up the money, leave the hostage somewhere, and you're home free."
Again, a reasonable assumption. Again, Amanda ignored it. She said,
"There is no secret endgame here. They want cash. We'll give them cash. We'll shove it so far down their throats they'll be shitting paper all the way to prison."
"He's right." Faith had been staring blankly ahead for most of this exchange, but with her hypoglycemia finally leveled out, she was back to thinking like a detective. What about the bank account? Amanda stood up to get more coffee.
The account doesn't matter.
Will seemed ready to disagree, but for his own reasons, he kept silent.
Amanda told Faith, "Your father was a gambler."
Faith shook her head. "That's not true."
"He played poker every weekend."
"For quarters." She kept shaking her head. "Dad was an insurance salesman. He hated risk."
"He wasn't risking anything. He was very careful."
Amanda went back around the kitchen island and sat down by Faith.
"How many times did he and Kenny go to Vegas when you were little?"
Faith was still unconvinced. "That was for work conventions."
"Bill was methodical about it. He was methodical about everything. You know that. He knew how to bluff and he knew when to walk away. Kenny wasn't as smart, but that's a story for another time."
She looked at Will.
"Bill didn't pay taxes on the money. That's why the bank account was a secret."
Sarah could see her own confusion reflected in Will's face. Past a certain amount, you couldn't just walk out of a Vegas casino, or any legal casino in America for that matter, without paying taxes. Faith didn't pick up on this. "I can't see Dad taking that kind of risk. He hated gambling. He was all over Kenny about it."
"Because Kenny was an idiot with his money,"
Amanda countered. The bitter edge to her voice reminded Sarah that the two had dated for many years.
"For Bill, it was just fun, blowing off steam, and sometimes he won a lot of money. And sometimes he lost a little, but he always knew when to walk away. It wasn't an addiction for him, it was sport."
Will finally spoke up. "Why didn't Evelyn tell me that when I was investigating her?" Amanda smiled.
"She didn't tell you a hell of a lot about anything when you were investigating her."
"No," he agreed. "But she could have easily gotten rid of the suspicion if..."
"There was no suspicion,"
Amanda interrupted. She directed her words toward Faith.
"Your mother was the one who turned in the team. That's why they called her Almeja. She was a snitch."
"What?" Faith's confusion was almost palpable. She looked at Will as if he had the answers. "Why didn't she tell me?"
Amanda said, "Because she wanted to protect you. The less you knew, the safer you were."
Will said, "Then why are you telling her now?" Amanda was obviously annoyed.
"Because you won't get off that stupid account, even though I've told you time and again that it doesn't matter."
Will had put his coffee mug on the counter. He slowly turned the handle so that it was parallel to the backsplash. Faith asked what Sarah was thinking. "How did she find out they were taking money?" Amanda shrugged.
"Does it matter?"
"Yes," Will answered. He obviously wanted to hear the story so that he could find the holes. Amanda took a deep breath before starting.
"There was a bust on the south side, one of the projects in East Point. Evelyn led the raid team into the apartment. Early morning. The bad guys were still asleep, hung over from the night before, with a pile of money sitting on the coffee table and enough coke to take down an elephant."
Amanda started to smile, clearly enjoying the story.
"They rounded them up and perp-walked them into the street. They had their hands behind their backs, sitting on their knees, staring at the doors on the squad cars to remind them who was in charge. In comes the media, which Boyd could never resist. He lines up the team for photos, with the bad guys in the background. Charlie's Angels territory. Your mother always hated that part. She usually left, went back to the office to do the paperwork, when the press came. This time, the street was blocked, so she went back into the apartment and looked around for herself."
Amanda pursed her lips.
"First thing she notices is that the cash pile doesn't look like it did before. She said it was stacked into a pyramid when they busted down the door. You know your mom was always the first one in."
Faith nodded.
"She said she noticed the pyramid right off because Zeke used to..."
"Pyramid everything," Faith explained. "When he was 10 or 11, he started stacking stuff, books, Legos, matchbox cars.
into pyramids.
Your mother thought he was autistic. Maybe she was right.
Amanda continued.
Anyway, she noticed the pile is the point here. That the pyramid was a square when she went back into the apartment. She started watching the team more closely after that, keeping her ear to the ground, tracking which cases made it and which fell apart because evidence was lost or witnesses went missing. And then, when she was sure, she came to me.
Will said, "You told me the tip was anonymous."
Evelyn had to be investigated just like everyone else. These weren't choir boys we were dealing with. Boyd and the crew were raking in tons of cash. They were also being paid to look the other way. You don't cut into that kind of business without risking your life. Ev had to be protected. So we decided that we'd call it an anonymous tip and put her through the ringer just like everyone else.
Faith said, "But they must have suspected the tip came from Mom. She was the only one who wasn't in on it."
There's a big leap between suspecting and knowing.
Her tone became strained.
And Boyd Spivey protected her. He let it be known that she was off limits. He stood up for her at every turn. I suppose that's why they took him out. They could take the GBI and the APD on their tails, but someone with Boyd's juice could get to them in ways we can't.
Faith was quiet, probably thinking about the dead man who had protected her mother. For her part, Sarah was thinking about the time and money that went into putting a hit on a man who lived on death row. The whole thing had been carefully planned and executed by people who knew Evelyn Mitchell's weak points. Boyd Spivey, her muscle. Faith, her daughter. Amanda, her best friend. This was sounding more and more like a revenge attack and less like a money grab. Sarah could tell that Will had made the same connections, but as usual, when he finally spoke, he didn't make mention of the obvious. Instead, he asked Amanda, "Did you redact the bank account out of my report?"
"We're not the IRS," she shrugged. "No reason to punish someone for doing the right thing."
Sarah could tell Will was angry, but he still said nothing. He didn't even seethe. He just tucked his hands into his pockets and leaned his back against the counter. She had never had an argument with him. At this point, she wasn't sure she ever would. But Sarah could imagine that it would be a grand exercise in futility. For her part, Faith seemed oblivious to the holes in Amanda's story. Considering her blood sugar had been spiking and plummeting like a ping-pong ball for the last few days, it was surprising she could even sit up straight. That was why Sarah was sure she'd heard wrong when Faith finally spoke. "They left her finger under my pillow." Amanda didn't blink an eye.
"Where's the finger?"
"In my medicine cabinet." Faith put her hand to her mouth. She looked as if she was going to be sick. Sarah jumped up and grabbed the trash can, but Faith waved her away. "I'm all right." She took a few deep breaths. Sarah got a glass out of the cabinet and filled it with water. Faith drank greedily, her throat making gulping sounds. Sarah refilled the glass and put it in front of her. She leaned back against the counter and kept an eye on Faith. Will was leaning a few feet down from her. His hands were still in his pockets. She felt the distance between them like a cold rush of air. Faith took a sip of water before telling them, "They tried to get Jeremy. I sent him away with my brother, Emma too. And then I went to the grocery store and the guy cornered me in the bathroom." Amanda asked,
"What did he look like?"
Faith gave them a very detailed description of his height, weight, clothing, grammar. "I think he was Hispanic. He had blue eyes." She looked at Sarah. "Is that normal?" "It's not common, but it's not rare," Sarah explained. "Mexico was settled by Spaniards. Some of them married Native Americans. Not all Mexicans have brown skin and dark hair. Some have blonde hair and lighter skin. Some have blue or green eyes. It's a recessive gene, but it shows up."
Amanda asked, "But this guy had blue eyes?"
Faith nodded.
No tattoos?
A snake on his neck. It was Amanda's turn to nod.
We can put that on the wire. At the very least, we can get a list of Hispanic men 18 to 20 who have blue eyes.
She seemed to remember something.
No luck on the search for tattoo parlors. Whoever did Marcellus Estevez's tattoo of the Archangel Gabriel is either out of state, off the books, or isn't talking.
There was something familiar about him, Faith said. I thought maybe I'd arrested him, but he told me no.
Oh, I'm sure he was telling the truth.
Amanda pulled out her BlackBerry and started typing as she talked.
I'll have records look through your reports. I know someone in the APD who can sneak in the back door for your cases before you started working with us.
I doubt you'll find anything. Faith rubbed her temples. He's Jeremy's age. Maybe he knows him. Maybe they went to school together, I don't know. Amanda finished her email.
Did you ask Jeremy?
Faith nodded her head. I gave him a rough description last night. He doesn't know anybody who fits that bill, at least no one he can recall. Will asked, is there anything else you can remember? Obviously there was something. Faith looked reticent. It's something really stupid. Maybe. She looked at Sarah. My blood sugar has been crazy. It's making me hallucinate. Sarah asked, in what way? She shook her head. It's stupid. The silverware drawer was wrong. She laughed at herself. It's really stupid. Never mind. Go on, Sarah told her. What was wrong with it? The forks were turned the wrong way. And the spoons and my pens were in the wrong drawer. I always put them in the same place and then I went into the living room and the snow globes were all turned toward the wall. They usually face out. I'm really careful with them. They belong to my father. I dust them every week. Jeremy isn't allowed to touch them. Zeke wouldn't go near them. She shook her head. I don't know. Maybe I did it last night and I don't remember. Maybe I just thought they were turned around. But I remember turning them back around, so... She put her head in her hands. My mind has been off kilter since all of this happened. I'm not sure what's real and what's not. Maybe I'm just going crazy. Could I be hallucinating? Sarah told her. Your numbers are erratic, but they don't point to metabolic derangement. You're not that dehydrated, but you're certainly under a lot of stress. Do you feel like you have a cold or infection? Faith shook her head. I'd expect confusion, which you've shown, and paranoia, which is understandable, but not full-on hallucinations. She felt the need to add, turning the snow globes around sounds more like something a kid would do for attention. You're sure your son didn't do it? I haven't asked him. It's embarrassing even to talk about. I'm sure it's nothing. Amanda was shaking her head.
Jeremy wouldn't do something like that, especially with what's been going on. He wouldn't want to cause you more stress. And he's almost 20 years old. He's too mature for that sort of thing.
Maybe I just imagined it, Faith said. Why would these guys turn around all the snow globes? She seemed to remember something else. And unscrew the light bulbs. Amanda sighed.
It doesn't matter, Faith. What matters is that we've got to get a plan together.
She checked her watch.
It's almost 7 o'clock. We need to put our thinking caps on.
Faith said, Will's right. They're watching Mom's house, and I know they're watching mine. If we bring in the APD...
I have no intention of doing something so stupid.
Amanda interrupted.
We still don't know if Chuck Finn is involved in this or not.
Faith opened her mouth to protest, but Amanda held up her hand to stop her.
I know you think that Chuck was pushed into a life of crime while the others willingly jumped in, but guilty doesn't come in shades. He took the money. He spent it. He confessed to his crimes, and he's out on the street somewhere with a very serious habit that costs a great deal of money. You also need to remember that Chuck still has friends on the Atlanta force. and where he doesn't have friends, he might have the money to buy them. I know you don't want to hear this, but there's no getting around that he either gave Hironobu Kwan the tip-off, or he's pulling the strings on this new group of young guns.
Faith countered. That doesn't sound like Chuck.
Skimming money off busts didn't sound like Chuck either, but here we are.
She told Will.
You mentioned the vantage point from Roz Levy's house. There's no way they could set up there. She'd shoot them the second they set foot in the driveway.
It's true, Faith agreed. Mrs. Levy watches the street like a hawk. Will countered. Unless someone's getting shot or kidnapped next door. Amanda ignored the observation.
The point, Will, is that we can exploit the position just as easily as the kidnappers can. Short of shipping you in the world's largest box, we need to figure out how we're going to get you and your rifle into Roz Levy's carport without being seen.
She looked at Faith.
Are you sure you weren't followed here?
Faith shook her head. I was careful. I wasn't followed.
Good girl,
Amanda told her. She was back in her element, almost giddy with the task at hand.
I need to make some phone calls to find out what's going on at Evelyn's house. Our bad guys wouldn't have suggested a meeting there if they thought the Atlanta crime scene unit was going to be steady at work. We'll see if Charlie can make some inquiries, too. Failing that, I think I've got a few more favors in my pocket with some old gals in Zone 6 who would love nothing more than to show the kids how it's done. Dr. Linton,
Sarah was surprised to hear her name. Yes?
Thank you for your time. I trust you'll keep this little party to yourself.
Of course. Faith stood behind Amanda. Thank you, she said. Again? Sarah hugged her. Be careful. Will was next. He held out his hand.
Dr. Linton?
Sarah looked down, wondering if she was having one of Faith's hallucinations. He was actually shaking her hand goodbye. He said,
Thank you for your help. I'm sorry we imposed on you this morning.
Faith mumbled something Sarah couldn't hear. Amanda opened the closet. Sarah guessed the smile on her face wasn't there because she was happy to see her coat.
I know a lot of Evelyn's neighbors. They're mostly retired, and I think that with the exception of that old battle axe across the street, they'll be okay with us using their places. I'll need to get my hands on some cash. I think I can make that happen, but we'll be tight for time.
She slipped on her coat.
Faith, you'll need to go home and wait until you hear from us. I imagine at some point we'll need you to run to a bank or two. Will, go home and change that shirt. The collar's frayed and you're missing a button. And while you're at it, you'd better start building a Trojan horse or come up with a plan to romance Roz Levy. She was ready to have Faith arrested an hour ago. God knows what bee is up her wrinkled old butt this morning.
Yes, ma'am.
Sarah opened the front door for them. Amanda started toward the elevator. Will, ever the gentleman, stepped aside so that Faith could leave first. Sarah shut the door after Faith.
What?
Will began, but she put her finger to his lips. Sweetheart, I know you've got work to do, and I know it's going to be dangerous. But whatever you get into today will not be nearly as life-threatening as what'll happen if you ever do to me what you did to me last night, and then think you can get off with a handshake the next morning. Okay? He swallowed. Call me later. She kissed him goodbye, then opened the door so that he could leave.
Chapter 17 Will subscribed to a lot of car magazines. Mostly he bought them for the pictures, but sometimes he felt compelled to read the articles. That's how he knew that Roz Levy's avocado green 1960s Chevrolet Corvair 700 sedan was worth considerably more than Faith's $5 appraisal. The car was a beauty, the sort of classic American car makers used to be known for.
The rear-mounted, air-cooled, horizontally opposed aluminum flat-six engine had been engineered to directly take on the increasingly more popular compact-sized European models coming onto the market. The design was renowned for its innovative swing-axle rear suspension, which received its own chapter in Ralph Nader's Unsafe at Any Speed. The spare tire was mounted in the forward luggage compartment where the engine was normally located in other cars, nestled right next to a gasoline heater for the passenger area. Though winter was over, the tank was still filled with gas, which Will knew because his face had been pressed against the metal canister while Faith drove him to Mrs. Levy's house. The sloshing of gasoline had been like ocean waves crashing against the shore. Or a highly volatile accelerant churning less than a rusty millimeter from his face. The car had been built well before the 2001 National Highway Traffic Safety Administration deadline that required all manufacturers to install a glow-in-the-dark emergency release strap in case someone got trapped in the trunk of the car. Will wasn't sure whether he would be able to reach a handle even if one existed. The trunk was deep, but not wide, more like a pelican's mouth. He was folded into a space meant to hold a spare tire and maybe a couple of suitcases. 1960s suitcases, not the modern wheelie kinds that people nowadays use to pack their entire houses in for a weekend trip to the mountains. In short, there existed the very real possibility that he might die in here before Roz Levy remembered that she was supposed to let him out. There was a thin sliver of light coming through the cracked rubber seal around the hinge. Will lifted up his cell phone to check the time. He'd been in the trunk for almost 2 hours, and had at least another half hour to go. His rifle was jammed between his legs in a way that was no longer pleasant. His paddle holster was turned so that his Glock dug into his side like an insistent finger. The bottle of water Faith had given him had long been recycled back into the plastic bottle. It was approximately 6,000 degrees inside the metal tomb. He had lost feeling in his hands and feet. He was beginning to think that this was a very bad idea. It was the words Trojan horse that had gotten him thinking. One call to Roz Levy proved that she wasn't going to make this easy for them. She was still pissed about Faith taking her car. She'd refused to let any of them inside of her house. Unusually, Will was the person who suggested the idiotic thing for him to do. Faith would return the Corvair to the carport. He would hide in the trunk until a few minutes before the appointed time. Mrs. Levy would take out her trash, releasing the trunk lid along the way. Will would then crawl out and give Faith cover. The fact that Roz Levy agreed to this alternate plan so easily made him suspect that she wasn't going to play along. But by then, another hour had passed, and they didn't really have a choice in the matter. There were other Trojan horses, too, most of them more clever than Will's. The good thing about Amanda's old gals was that they were old, and they were women, which went against type in this particular situation. Whoever was watching the neighborhood would be expecting testosterone-pumped young guns with trigger fingers and short haircuts. Amanda had sent in six of her friends to various houses around the block. They'd had bakeware and cake stands in their hands, their purses dangling from their arms. Some of them carried Bibles. They would look like visitors to anyone who was paying attention. The outside perimeter was covered by a cable truck, a mobile pet groomer's van, and a bright yellow Prius that no self-respecting cop would ever drive. Between the three vehicles, they could monitor all traffic coming in and out of the two roads that led to the Mitchell section of the neighborhood. Even with all of this, Will was still not happy with the plan. It was the lesser of two evils, the greater evil being no police presence at all. He didn't like the idea of Faith being so vulnerable. Even though she was armed and had proven to anyone who was paying attention that she would not hesitate to shoot somebody. He felt in his gut that Amanda was wrong. This wasn't about money. Maybe on the surface it was. Maybe even the kidnappers themselves thought it was about cold, hard cash, but at the end of the day, their behavior belied that motivation. This was personal. Someone was working out a grudge. Chuck Finn seemed like the most likely culprit. His underlings wanted the cash. Chuck wanted revenge. It was a win-win for everyone but Faith. And for the idiot trapped in a 1960 Corvair. Will winced as he tried to shift his position. His back ached. His nose itched. His ass felt like he had been pressing his full weight against a piece of hardened steel for 2 hours. In retrospect, shoving Will into a trunk sounded more like the kind of idea Amanda would have. Painful, humiliating, bound to end badly for Will. He must have had some sort of death wish. Or maybe he just wanted to spend a couple of hours simmering in the heat because it was the only way he'd have time to think about what he'd gotten himself into. And he didn't mean the car. Will had never smoked a cigarette. He'd never done an illegal drug of any kind. He hated the taste of alcohol. As a kid, he'd seen how addictions could ruin lives. And as a cop, he saw how it could end them. He'd never been tempted to imbibe. He'd never understood how people could be so desperate for the next high that they were willing to trade away their lives and everything that mattered for another hit. They stole, they prostituted themselves, they abandoned or sold their children. They murdered people. They would do anything to avoid getting dope sick, that point at which the body craved the drug so badly that it turned on itself. Muscle cramps, stabbing pains in the gut, blinding headaches, cotton mouth, heart palpitations, sweaty palms. Will's physical discomfort wasn't solely caused by the tight quarters in Mrs. Levy's Corvair. He was dope sick for Sarah. To his credit, he realized that his response to her was completely disproportionate to what a normal human being should be feeling right now. He was going to make a fool of himself, more so than he already had. He didn't know how to be around her, at least not when they weren't having sex. And they'd had a lot of sex, so it had taken Sarah some time before she finally got the full-on view of Will's astounding stupidity. And what a show he had put on for her, shaking her hand like a realtor at an open house. He was surprised that she hadn't slapped him. Even Amanda and Faith had been at a loss for words as they'd all waited for the elevator in the hall. His idiocy had actually rendered them speechless. Will was beginning to wonder if there was something physically wrong with him. Maybe he was diabetic like Faith. She was always yelling at him about his afternoon sticky bun, his second breakfast, his love of cheesy nachos from the downstairs vending machine. He went through his symptoms. He was sweating profusely. His thoughts were racing. He was confused. He was thirsty, and he really, really needed to urinate. Sarah hadn't seemed mad at him when she told him goodbye. She had called him sweetheart, which he'd only been called once before, and that time was by her, too. She had kissed him. It wasn't a passionate kiss, more like a peck. The sort of thing you saw on 1950s television shows right before the husband put on his hat and went off to work. She had told him to call her later. Did she really want him to call her, or had she just been making a point? Will was used to the women in his life making points at his expense. But what defined later? Did that mean later tonight or later tomorrow, or later in the week? Will groaned. He was a 34-year-old man with a job and a dog to take care of. He had to get himself back under control. There was no way he was going to call Sarah. Not later tonight or even later next week. He was too unsophisticated for her. Too socially awkward. Too desperate to be with her. Will had learned the hard way that the best thing to do when you really wanted something was to put it out of your mind, because you were never going to get it. He had to do that now with Sarah. He had to do that before he got himself shot or he ended up getting Faith killed because he was acting like a lovesick schoolgirl. The worst part was that Angie had been right about everything. Well, maybe not everything. Sarah didn't color her hair. His phone vibrated. Will struggled not to castrate himself with his rifle while he pressed the Bluetooth piece into his ear. The trunk was well insulated, but he still kept his voice to a whisper. Yeah? Will. That's all he needed. Amanda's voice in his head. What are you doing? Sweating, he whispered back,
wondering if she could have asked a more pointless question. He'd had this idea of springing out of the trunk like a superhero. After all this time, he realized he'd probably do well not to roll out onto the ground like a tongue.
"We're set up at Ida Johnson's," Evelyn's backyard neighbor.
Will wasn't sure how Amanda had sweet-talked the woman into letting a bunch of cops sit in her house. Maybe she'd promised that Faith wouldn't shoot any more drug dealers in her yard again.
"I just heard a call on the scanner. There was a drive-by shooting in East Atlanta. 2 dead. Abidi Mittal and his team just left Evelyn's house so they can process the car. High profile. A woman and her kid. White, blonde, middle class, pretty."
So now they knew how the kidnappers planned to get Evelyn's house cleared out. Amanda had made some discreet calls earlier and found out that the CSU team had at least another 3 days on the house. They knew that Evelyn's abductors had some drive-by experience. Obviously, these particular bad guys weren't afraid of killing innocent bystanders. And they knew exactly the right victim profile to make sure every news station in Atlanta halted programming to cover the events live at the scene. The most troubling part to Will was that this proved they had no problem murdering a mother and her child.
Amanda said, "Evelyn's backyard is dug up."
Maybe it was the heat. Will had the image of a dog looking for a bone.
"She must have told them the money was in the backyard. Holes are everywhere."
That had been one of Will's early guesses. He saw how stupid it was now. People didn't hide money like that anymore. Even Evelyn had a bank account. Everything was on a file in a computer these days. He kept his tone low.
"Did Mrs. Levy see them digging?"
Amanda was uncharacteristically silent.
"Amanda?" "She's not answering her phone right now, but I'm sure she's just taking a nap."
He couldn't swallow. It wasn't funny anymore now that it might actually happen.
"She'll have her alarm set to wake her."
Will wondered how the old woman was going to hear her alarm if she couldn't hear a phone. And then he stopped worrying because he was going to pass out from heat stroke long before that happened.
Amanda said, "I've got 2 friends with me and another old gal in the street. She'll keep an eye on Faith while she's en route to the house. Bev's with the Secret Service. She requisitioned a mail truck."
Will wished that he were more surprised by this information. If Amanda told him that she called an old gal at the White House and borrowed the nuclear codes, he would just nod.
"Everything's lining up."
Amanda always got chatty right before a case was about to break, and now was no exception.
"Faith is waiting at her house. She went to 3 different banks this morning to support her safe deposit box story. We had one of the managers hand her the cash at the last drop. All the bills are registered. There's a tracker in the lining of the duffel."
She was silent for a moment.
"I think she'll be okay. Sarah got her evened out for now. I'm worried that she's not taking care of herself."
Will was worried about that, too. He'd always thought of Faith as indestructible. She seemed capable of handling any crisis. Maybe that had come from being thrust into motherhood before she was ready. Mrs. Levy's words about the pregnancy scandal rocking the neighborhood kept coming back to him. Faith obviously still carried some shame. She had blushed when she explained her mother's words to Sarah, though Evelyn was obviously just using what might be her last words to her daughter to lift away some of that guilt. Faith's entire life had been shattered by her pregnancy. Somehow, she had managed to pick up the pieces. Evelyn had been there to offer her support, but Faith had done all the heavy lifting. Getting her GED, joining the academy, going back to college,